This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Is the Annie Fry Show.
Brian, do you support Trump's tariffs? Well, at least that's the YouTube live chat poll for today. Yes, unsure, or no. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show, 207. Can you get me that Cut 19 video link here real quick? Because I want to get to that after we have our little roundtable discussion. Along with your comments on the Annie Fry YouTube channel, we want to know how you feel about Trump's tariffs. He's called, what is it, Liberation Day tomorrow?
Yes.
I love that he's like, we're not doing it April 1st, and you know why.
Yeah. The April 1st thing is not the funny part. The Liberation Day is funny. I don't know. They needed to name it, and so they did.
Let's see here. That's not the right one. I'm going to get rid of that. So we want to know what you're thinking about this poll, and I gave you the option, a rarity, to say you're unsure. Because I was assuming that if most people were being honest, that they'd be unsure. But we want to know what you think. Betsy says, I chose unsure even though I have confidence in our current president. And Betsy, you could have said that for me. I have full confidence in Donald Trump and his understanding of the situation. So I completely believe that he knows what he's doing. But I do not have the economic intellect. Here's what I can do. I can regurgitate to you what Donald Trump says is going to happen with tariffs. And what he says is going to happen, I hear, and I don't, and I'm a critical thinker. I'm constantly trying to ask questions that challenge whatever is being positioned out there. It makes sense to me what he's saying. But I don't know. So.
Yeah. So.
I'm an unsure.
Well, I'm a yes on this for now, because what he's doing with tariffs is really just part of an overall strategy that he's doing entirely. And it's his whole cabinet. They're all moving in this direction. Even if there's a little bit of dissension, they pull back and forth. That's the purpose of having a cabinet, is that that happens. But he is trying to do a full global economic realignment. And it is big and it is bold. And will it work? That I don't know, but I am all in favor of trying to do something different, because the current economic situation of the way the world works. Look, I love that we are capitalists here, and capitalist nations tend to do better. But we have drifted away, and so have so many countries of the world, drifted away from capitalism, true capitalism. And this is an attempt to realign everything again with American capitalism. And you're doing it through tariffs, you're doing it through a lot of other means as well, but they're being creative. And that's overall why I like that they're trying something. And they have the right priorities. So I'm willing to see this thing through.
I'm like paying super close attention like a student in class, because it's not just tariffs that he's implementing. Energy is a huge, huge factor in the cost to produce and the cost to deliver. Now, I've been paying, I think the gas station that's right by the Tucker stand span is $2.94, I think, in perpetuity.
Yeah, it doesn't move much, does it,
no,
lately?
I'm always like, hey, it's below $3, but it's been $2.94. Not complaining, because it's like $3.29, I think, in the Edwardsville area where I would be getting gas. Went to Macoupin County, like I said, and I think I saw it might have been $3.29, you know, out where there wasn't a bunch of gas stations competing with each other. So I'm thinking, like, under $3.50 is probably the high side for most of Illinois. Forget about the Chicago Cook County area. That's just a different animal. But watching gas prices definitely come down from where they were during Biden's highs, all of this stuff takes time. You've got to implement the changes, and then it has to get going and get into this flow of the system. But you start combining the suspected results of tariffs, the results of lower fuel costs, oil prices, gas prices, then all of a sudden things start coming together. And I'm just wondering, like, when it all comes together, are we going to be able to say, oh, that was tariffs, and oh, that was gas prices? Will we be able to pin it down?
Yeah, in a way that we will, because what he is trying to do is not just... It's not tariffs for the sake of tariffs. I think people get lost in the tariff talk because Trump, I guess, you know, in a way, has not painted the picture of why he's doing what he's doing well enough. But what he's trying to do...
I understand what you're saying, because I hear that criticism a lot. But he has repeatedly said, look what they're doing to us. We're just going tit for tat here.
Level the playing field. But what he's trying to do is get every major company in the world, even minor company in the world, to at least have a footprint here. And that brings a lot of money here. That's the goal.
There are times in my life where I paid a lot of attention to Made in America. I believe I've told this story before. When I went to Washington, D.C. on my son's eighth grade trip, we were in the Pentagon City Mall, which I just noticed this weekend there was like a big riot there. And I was like, oh, I remember going to that subway there. And I saw this place and I was like, I know what this place is. And it was some sort of riot. People were upset and then they started rioting.
That's what you do,
I guess. But I went up to this. It was one of the first places we went was the Pentagon 9/11 Memorial. And then we went over to have lunch at the food court. You got an eighth grade class and everybody feed a lot of people. You pick what you want. It's an easy thing to do. And afterwards, there was this big, as they have them, you know, in a mall, like a kiosk type of a thing with a bunch of merch all over it. And it was a bunch of Trump merch. Now, this was May of 2024. So Donald Trump was under indictment, being charged with 8 million different things. He was a declared candidate for president, but I don't know that he was the only one at that time in May of 2024. And I told you that my son had said to me he wanted a MAGA hat. And I had told you that he said he wanted to buy himself. And I was like, I was pushing back big time. I was like, you don't know what you're getting yourself into. So we walk up to this kiosk there, and it's got a bunch of MAGA stuff all over the place. And I said to this guy, hey, is this stuff made in America? And he goes, hell no, it's not made in America. Do you know how much it costs to make things in America? And like he chewed me out for suggesting. And I was like, okay, well, I don't really want to buy a MAGA hat that's not made in America. When I bought a MAGA hat and a T-shirt, I bought a few of them when I went to New York City in 2019. And those were made in America. And they were in every iHeartNY shirt or store that was around New York City. And this guy was like, it was clearly the stupidest thing he had heard that day was are these made in America? And I was like, well, no. I said to my son, I go, if I permit this transaction to happen, we're going to find one that's made in America. Didn't exist.
Really?
No. These people aren't doing this on behalf of Donald Trump.
No.
You know where they knew how they could make money? They had zero things in there that were for Joe Biden or Kamala Harris. I saw maybe three things that had Kamala Harris on them. One of them was in the bottom of the Smithsonian in their shop. And I think it might have been a bobblehead or something. And the other two were not flattering. They were, I would say, distasteful. And I'm not a big fan of hers. Long story short, if you hadn't heard about it, eventually I let my son do it. He told me, the conversation was, we're standing outside of the National Archives. And these people just have wagons full of merchandise, and they're sitting out there, and a bucket hat, if you want an actual, like, regular MAGA hat, they have all of these things out there, $20 a hat. These hats are $2 hats. And my son's like, I really want to get a MAGA hat. And I said to him, I said, you don't understand what's going to happen and what people are going to say to you when you walk around with that hat on. And he goes, Mom, I know what they're going to say to me, and I don't care. And I said, go get your MAGA hat.
All right.
You want to buy it with your money? Go get it. So he bought it, and he wore it the rest of the weekend. And it was the weirdest thing, because it was May. And in May in Washington, D.C., they are flooded with 8th grade class trips or whatever it is. They're just kids everywhere. And they were there. I would say 5% of them, of those kids, were wearing some sort of MAGA something. And the more kids saw people wearing MAGA stuff, the more they wanted to wear MAGA stuff. It was just cool. All this to say that Made in America is not something that is really thought of or championed. And we don't consider Made in America as an affront. We've grown up Made in China, you know, Made in India, Made in wherever. But when you do think about what Made in America means, that means that there are jobs in America that created that thing. That means that the money that is being spent is staying inside of the United States. That boosts the economy multiple times over, as opposed to just some Joe Schmo with a wagon selling a cheap hat that you could maybe get somewhere else. Like, I've bought MAGA hats for people in my life before from Donald Trump's website, and I'm pretty sure I paid $45 for that sucker, because it was a donation.
Yep.
That came with a hat.
I don't think that Trump is beating around the bush on this. I don't think he's come right out and said this verbatim, but there's a real possibility that crap goes up in price. Like, a lot of the cheap sort of junk crap that we get, it may not be as cheap if the tariffs have their full effect. He's not even focused on that, though. He's focused on food. He's focused on the big items, cars. You know, that's the stuff, chips. That's the stuff he's focusing on, because he wants to bring the big business in. Now, the little stuff, I don't know exactly what's going to happen with that. It may go up in price. Clothes.
But if crap goes up in price and levels out the playing field, the free market would dictate that if you want to buy American, then maybe you want to be the lowest priced buy American thing. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
Yeah.
We're going to break here real quick. Do you support Trump's tariffs? Yes, unsure, or no? We'd love to know what you think about this. Get some of your feedback as well in the Annie Fry YouTube live chat. That's where you go vote. We are 294 people away from 12,000 subscribers. So if you wanted to be one of those 294 people that gets us over the 12,000 mark, we'd love to have you. Come join us on the Annie Fry YouTube channel. And there you can vote in the poll and leave a comment if you so choose. We'd love to say hi to you. So reach out to us. We'll be right back. Shoulder workout. I don't think my shoulders can do that right now.
I only do it to World War I reference music. Franz Ferdinand.
Take me out.
Ooh, maybe that's a Franz Ferdinand full reference, because he got shot.
This is a lot of detail.
Ooh, man.
I don't know much about.
Wow.
Are you making this up?
No, I'm not. Right, historian Brad?
You said no.
Correct.
I'm not. Like, why would I make that up?
I don't ever
up?
Make things up.
Franz Ferdinand was the Archduke of Austria, and he was shot by something princip, and that kind of kicked off everything in World War I.
See? See? Like, I would make that up.
You could.
I don't make up any historical reference ever,
yeah,
or anything.
Don't tell my husband that we were talking about history and I was unsupervised.
Just say, what do you think started World War I? And see what he says.
No, I don't have that kind of time.
Okay.
Here is a story that I came across. And first of all, were either of you guys raised by helicopter parents? How would you define, Brad, a helicopter parent?
The helicopter parent is always over or around their child, making sure that everything is going well for their child. They don't really give them a lot of freedom. They kind of like, this is the way things are. And then if they kind of get out of the way, they push them back in line. They're a little bit different than the lawnmower parent, which goes in front of them and knocks everything down. But they're very hovering is why they call him a helicopter parent. They're always there. They're always kind of around and controlling.
Quick Rick says an overprotective parent. How do you describe helicopter parenting, Ryan?
Somebody
don't
who,
do something stupid.
Okay,
here.
Just, I would just say the same as Brad then.
You scrapped it. I stayed on something stupid, and you're like, all right.
Yeah, I had a whole thing about how my parents used to wear
beanies, and they would spin them, and then they would fly up above me.
And
let's take a moment and reflect back on the one question you asked Ryan Schmelz today.
Uh-huh. Yeah. let's think about that.
It was, what did you say, the worst question you've ever asked in an interview?
Yeah, I think it was.
It's in the podcast, folks. Annie Fry podcast, available at anniefryshow.com/podcast. Yeah. Go listen to that and comment. I don't even know if you can comment.
Later. You have to do that later because the podcast isn't there.
Just
right
share
now.
It's like Ryan's most, I wouldn't say your most unprofessional moment, but just maybe.
It was just bad. it was just a bad question.
And we pointed out, you also, that you had a punchline,
yeah,
but no journey to get
there. That's the thing. It was a joke question to begin with, which with Ryan Schmelz, I don't know. Like, have we ever done that? Not really. So I was taking a flyer there, trying that. And it wasn't even a good joke. It had a punchline and no joke.
You couldn't help yourself, though. It's the only question you asked in that interview.
I know. And I was like, oh, I think I got something. And, you know, this stuff happens live. And so as it was happening, I was like, oh, no.
I could tell.
I didn't have
if
something.
If you watch it back on the YouTube, you can see his face start to fade.
Like, oh, I think this might fall flat. It was in that moment.
I fall flat.
It's okay. But when you're doing it and you're taking a risk, you're asking a guest, that's not the time to fall flat.
Sometimes you can ask a guest a question and maybe you don't articulate it, or maybe I don't articulate it exactly the way I want to, and then they take it completely wrong or something, and you're just like, could have left that one on the shelf.
Right.
There's a lot of self-reflection happening in the moment.
Yes, there was. But I was in it. You know, I had to keep going. What am I going to do? Because I didn't have a real question to fall back on.
Helicopter parent, for real?
No.
How would you define it?
As
if you're saying you're not, you didn't have them, what are they?
I didn't have them, and I am not one. Somebody who is oversees every aspect of their child's life, or as much as possible.
I'm trying to think of, can you think of any, don't name names, but can you think of anyone you grew up with who had helicopter parents in the 80s and 90s?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
What was it like?
Keith Henderson.
Oh, stop it! Keith, he doesn't mean it.
No, not you, Keith. It was your mom. No, I just made that up. Just like everything else.
There's a Keith Henderson out there right now who is in big trouble by his mom, who's probably the one listening to the show.
And it's not you, Keith Henderson, from O'Fallon, Missouri. I lived in Illinois. So
it's the O'Fallon, Illinois one.
Yes, that guy. Oh, man, that guy's a wreck.
Is there more of a reason in 2025 to be a helicopter parent than there was in 1995?
Yes, there is. There is more danger.
How would you define that?
It is easier, especially with digital stuff, it is easier to have stuff that used to be just kind of out there that it was possible for a kid to encounter, but now it's in your living room, it's in their room. And so you've got to be a lot more careful.
Unless you don't let it.
Well, that's what I mean, is that you have to be a lot more careful. And that's not even helicopter parenting. That's more just you have to be that aware of everything.
If I am a helicopter parent, it's over digital and technology.
You have to be.
And I don't care if people don't like it. And my kids, honestly, I don't know that they would. If they had the freedoms that a lot of their friends have, and I'm not here to parent other people's kids. I'm here to parent my kid. And, you know, I think that if you want to draw boundaries for your own child, I think it's helpful if your child understands why the boundaries have been drawn that way. It's not because I said so. Sometimes it will get to the point that it's because I said so. If you've had to explain yourself, and I say had to explain yourself, I think that there are boomer parents who are like, I shouldn't have to explain myself. It's because I said so. It's kind of in part how we were raised. But what we are having to do as a generation, millennials, Gen Xers, raising children in a digital world is nothing like what we were raised in. Got on my bike in the morning, went into town, no cell phone, maybe a quarter or two for a payphone, gone all day in the summer while my parents would be at work. Like, they would go to work in the summer and we would go ride bikes all day, and there was no contact. And I don't think that my parents worried about me.
Nah.
It's not like we were doing things out and about. And, you know, I'm not going to say that I got into trouble, but there were probably times that if my parents would have been there with us, they might have been like, hey, knock that off, or don't do that, or, you know, to maybe the group of people who we would be with at the time. There's a post from Everything Georgia on X. A 24-year-old Augusta man was arrested for leaving his children, ages 1, 6, and 10, alone in a McDonald's while he attended a nearby job interview. And I don't have a bunch of the other details about this because it doesn't link to a news report. So we're talking about this more theoretically than we are specifically to this case. 24-year-old man going nearby to a job interview and puts the 1, 6, and 10-year-old at the nearby McDonald's. And Hannah Cox retweeted this and said, helicopter parenting culture has to end. This is insane. A 10-year-old looking after their siblings in a safe place for a short period of time while their parent does something next door was normal like 30 years ago. And I don't think that you should be leaving a 10, a 6, and a 1-year-old in a McDonald's this day and age and be leaving their sight. Like, I'm sitting here going, am I a helicopter parent for thinking that that is not a responsible behavior? I mean, the amount of time that something bad, super, super bad could happen in a McDonald's, I'd be more inclined to say leave them, not that it's the best option, if you're going for a job interview, I mean, depending on what the job interview is, I would say, can you take them in and just have your kids try to sit quietly? And maybe hopefully your new employer will understand that you're trying to get a job to provide for your family and they can sit by while you interview or something. Potentially, I don't know that it's a good idea to leave a 1-year-old in a car. But I would, if I were only given two options, take them and drop them off inside a McDonald's and leave them in a locked car that was out right outside the door of where I am, I'm going with the car.
Man, 10 and 6, even then, leaving them at a McDonald's, I'm like, I don't know about 10 and 6 leaving a McDonald's. 10, 6, and 1, definitely not.
1-year-old?
That's a 1-year-old.
Not all 1-year-olds can walk.
Yeah. A 10-year-old should be able to watch their younger siblings for a short period of time. That's okay. But at home, usually, not at a McDonald's.
Well, that's the other thing. Like, I don't know what the circumstances are at home, but you would be better off leaving them at home than you would a nearby McDonald's, unless you're super far away from home or whatever.
That's the only way I could see it. You like that the guy's trying, but, man, a 1-year-old, there's just not much that you can do as a parent without having somebody who's at least a teenager watching a 1-year-old for a short period of time, okay. But 10 years, I don't know, it's just...
We never left our 1-year-old alone with her older siblings.
That's what I mean. It's just young. A little bit too young. I could see trying. Like, if you're just in a bad spot and you're like, look, I have to get this job. My kid is maybe 2 or the older kid's 13. And it's only going to take a half an hour. I don't know. Even at that point, I'm like, I don't think I would do it. But I'm also not in that situation.
But
you get desperate.
So the real conversation to me here is this person is saying helicopter parenting culture has to end. Doing something like this was normal 30 years ago. I don't think 30 years ago has anything to do with today when it comes to parenting. Because I was raised 30 years ago. I would have been 10 30 years ago. And it is not even apples to oranges. It's like apples to broccoli. It's so, so very different today than it was when we were growing up that I can understand being like, you know, this type of parenting is a little too much or maybe not enough. Or like, I understand looking at parenting and trying to make judgment decisions on it. But I don't think that comparing it to 30 years ago is a valid basis of judging. Like, when I was your age, sounded silly to us when our parents said it.
The only picture I can see of that working is not 30 years ago and still in a McDonald's. Like 30 years ago in a McDonald's, you don't walk in and you go, oh, there's a 10-year-old watching his 6-year-old and 1-year-old sibling. And you're like, oh, well, like, even then that wasn't really appropriate. I could see, like, if somebody really tried and said, well, it was the Depression. And back on the farm, Dad had to go out and do some work for a little while. The 10-year-old was at home watching the 1-year-old and the 6-year-old. You go, oh, maybe that's the way it was. But it wasn't in the McDonald's.
That was also a very different time. We have a comment says, why does a 24-year-old have a 10-year-old? Because it does say a 24-year-old Augusta man was arrested for leaving his children ages 1, 6, and 10 alone. Now, first and foremost, it could absolutely be a stepkid that he's responsible for or a child that he is taking care of. But I'm here to say, if this is a man who got a woman pregnant and is raising this child when he got him pregnant at 14 and is raising this child and trying to get a job and provide for them, I don't care that the end result is an age gap that makes us scratch our head. Good on him for trying to provide for this kid. Like, when I'm thinking about, you know, I don't know that we've talked a whole lot about this, but SNAP funds for things like soda. What if you took out all of the SNAP type of funding that goes for non-essential junk type of food and applied that to things you could, like, what if we had, and I'm not, like, don't be like, Annie's trying to create more government structures and whatever. Okay, stop. But what if we had vouchers that you could apply for something exactly like this that would provide for hourly care and you could have certain local daycares participate in a system where they would get a government-funded voucher for like an hour's worth of time, maybe a 2-hour block of time, where they could set up childcare for those 2 hours for an approved reason. A necessary medical visit, a job interview, like these types of things that would help people who are on the system get off the system.
Well, you're talking about a reform to the way that we do welfare, essentially. And the trouble with the way our politics is now, up until Donald Trump, honestly, because he's willing to take on anything. But nobody's ever been willing to say, why don't we rethink this? Because there's so much political capital to lose in just saying that phrase, whether it be any other, like whether it's welfare or food stamps or Social Security or whatever, you can't have the conversation. People will shut it down and go, oh, you're going to change you're going to make everybody lose their payments. No, you have to evolve. I'm not saying I like all of these programs, but I am saying that what you're advocating for is just reform them.
Yes, and to provide people the hand up that they need, because there is a great barrier there between taking out government benefits, welfare subsidies for food, for, you know, provision, for housing and all of that stuff. We should have a welfare system that helps people who truly need it get themselves to a place where they can support themselves. The goal of welfare should be to get people off of welfare.
Yes.
It should not in any way, shape, or form be something where when you're on welfare, the system is so insulating that you can't get out of it. So if you have, like, does this person, I don't know, you know, if he's leaving him in a McDonald's, it makes me think that maybe he doesn't have a village to help him raise his family, you know, a family unit that's there to support him. I don't know where he's looking to apply, so I can't speak to the quality of the job he's going to get. But here's a guy who has children who's trying to get a job. How do we help this guy get a job and provide for his family outside of what, and I don't even know that he is on any sort of welfare, but it seems to me like if he were financially in a position to do so, he would have been able to acquire some sort of childcare and paid the person to come watch these children the way other people would. To me, if you're leaving your children at a McDonald's, you were either a terrible parent for just not taking up the options that would be available to you should you be able to afford them. If you're doing this as a last resort, That's not bad parenting. That might be desperation. And if you're doing something in an act of desperation because you're trying to get yourself to a place where you can provide for yourself, I want to help that person.
Mm-hmm. Scooter says, the goal of welfare is to help the working poor.
Help them what?
Stay on welfare.
Be poor? Be comfortably poor?
Yeah, you just keeps, comfortable it just enough? Keeps people poor. Trust me, I've been in this situation. You guys may have too, where you I was without a job. There's been times that I have no job. Okay, what am I going to do? I start looking at, well, are there programs out there that can help me for a short period of time? That's actually the intent of those programs. And you know what I realized after looking into those? It is harder to get off of mm-hmm. them to get a job, because then once you get on it, you're incentivized to stay on it. Because the minute you start making money, you got to make above a certain threshold for it to be worth it to get off of the program.
Yeah.
And it is so stupid. And it angered me, because I'd be in a situation where I'd be looking at a job. Actually, it might have been when I first started here. I was looking at this job. And man, at the time, I was like a part-time producer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I want to work because it's in my bones that that's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And I wanted to work here. But it would have been better off for me for about 6 months there while I was part-time to not have a job.
Yeah.
And that made me so angry at the time. And it's comments like that that they sound nice. And so when you hear them, you go, well, yeah, that's a nice thing to
say. But that's also somebody who's looking down on those mm-hmm. people. That's not coming from a place, and I don't know Scooter's particular experience. I don't know if he's ever had to deal with welfare. I don't know if he's ever had to partake in it himself. But you're talking about your integrity. You're talking about your own worth and your value to yourself and to your family. And just making a payment, that doesn't fill that worth.
No, it makes you feel worse, actually. I hate to say that, because I know that there are people who, you know, good people who have used the social safety nets. I understand that. But the minute you get addicted to that safety net, your self-worth, you don't have the integrity of waking up and being a part of the struggle. And the struggle is important. For me, anyway, I think that's probably true of most people. But I know for me that I needed to be contributing to feel like I was a person.
Yeah. And when you have a system that makes people just comfortable enough to stay in the system, and it makes it just difficult enough to get out of the system, then you perpetuate, now you're perpetuating a system. You're not actually helping people. And when folks like kind of do that look down on the thing, like, oh, you're just helping them make ends meet. To what extent? That's the best that they could ever do. You're saying those people are stuck in their lot in life, that barely making ends meet on somebody else's dime is the best they can ever do. And I assure you that those people, that there are wonderful, great people right now who, not because they want to, but because they have to, are using some sort of subsidy welfare program to make ends meet, are just like you. They don't want to be doing it, but maybe they're doing it because that's the only way they can provide for their family. Why would we not be giving those people the hand up? Let's take a quick break. Vote in the YouTube live chat poll. Do you support Trump's tariffs? Yes, unsure, or no? We'll be right back. Well, Ethan, how about them Cardinals?
3-1 start.
3-1 start. Not bad. How would you enjoy the opportunity to sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game at Wrigley?
Yeah, absolutely. That would be so cool.
All the greats have done it.
Take me out to the ball game.
Donald Trump.
Take me out to the ground.
Angelic.
Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack.
I think if you didn't have the music.
I don't care if I never
sing.
It's root for the whole team.
I think Melania is trying to read the words.
He didn't even say Cubs.
One, two, three.
Because he's a politician.
I have to imagine at that point, though, it is so loud, you can't even hear your own voice, like, singing it. You're probably just screaming it because you can't do any better.
Is he not the best sport? He is so... People talk about... I mean, yes, he has an ego that is magnificently large. I understand that. But he has done so many things in his lifetime where he is completely not taking himself seriously and throwing himself to the potential wolves to be sliced and diced by critics for doing things like this. And they loved him. They loved him for it. They celebrated him for it.
I gotta say, I'm surprised to hear that he did this. This was Wrigley Field.
Yeah. I mean, this is...
Because he's such a New York guy that I don't know how he ended up there. Were they playing the Mets or something?
Did I send you the thing from the Oscars? I thought I sent that to myself.
Doesn't he have a... He has a tower in Chicago, too, though.
Oh, yeah, he's got a
tower. Well, I guess that's true. I guess that's true. But he has a tower everywhere. He's not singing songs at everybody's ballpark.
This was... How long ago was this taken? This looks like it's 30 years old.
Yeah,
this is
ancient.
A younger Donald Trump that just happened to be...
Well, I know this wasn't yesterday.
At a Cubs game. Like, all kinds of celebrities do that.
But most of the stuff he did was New York, though. You know, he would be on Jimmy Kimmel or whatever, David Letterman. He'd be on these shows. He did SNL. It was all New York stuff.
Sorry. Just can't get it.
So good. You just had to hear it.
He's playing me off like Chuck Schumer.
Yeah. You're like,
shut up.
You need to stop talking here. Here's another one. And this is...
Farm living is the life for me. Land spread.
Oh, my God.
He's in overalls.
Keep Manhattan. Just give me that countryside.
Keep Manhattan, I see.
See, New York.
This is a girl from Will and Grace.
Megan Mullally.
What?
Megan Mullally.
Just adore penthouse views. Darling, I love you. Give me Park Avenue.
The chores.
The chores.
Fresh air.
Trump Tower.
Trump Tower. I'm just telling you, a little Donald Trump there to take you into the Mark Reardon show. Remember, they loved him until he became a Republican. Ethan, you want to hit us up with the results of today's live chat poll?
God, her voice was like nails on a chalkboard. That was terrible.
I love that you didn't complain about Trump's voice.
He
is, on the other hand.
307 votes on today's YouTube live chat poll. Do you support Trump's tariffs? 75% say yes, 20% say unsure, and just 5% say no.
Wow. Nice. All right. Well, let's hand it over to Mark Reardon. We'll be back at noon tomorrow. Don't go away.